WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Welcome to WrestleSpective Radio. This is Jason Mann, and with me today is Don Owens from the Future Endeavors Podcast. Don, how you doing?
What's up, Jason? And happy birthday here on the West Coast. It is still your birthday, so
I'm at.
Happy birthday.
Very good. Thank you very much. So today we're going to talk about Over the Limit 2011 and what's going on in the wrestling world, particularly in WWE. So what did you think about Over the Limit overall?
Overall, I liked it. You know, this was a funny pay-per-view because it was all over the place with a lot of the Twitter people and all that stuff. You know, some people were just like, oh, that was a horrible pay-per-view. What a waste of money and this and that. But I actually had no qualms with it. I thought it was pretty solid from beginning to end. You know, there wasn't a match, honestly, really on here that I thought, you know, wasn't decent and didn't fit its spot. You know, the thing I liked going into this was there was a lot of new matches that we haven't seen before, you know, and that's exciting because obviously we know in WWE's world, it's a lot of rehash. It's a lot of redos. And that's what we had at, you know, WrestleMania and Extreme Rules and stuff like that. So Over the Limit gave us a lot of fresh feuds and I loved it. So, I mean, you know, was it the greatest pay-per-view? No, but I thought it was fun. I thought it was a good time and I thought that most matches did what they were supposed to. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I actually really did too. I was a little surprised because I watched it after. I didn't watch it as it was happening. I watched it later, and I, you know, kind of caught bits and pieces of Twitter feedback. And you know, I thought there was really negative on the main event, Miz versus John Cena for the I Quit match for WWE title. And it seemed like it was really negative, but when I watched the match, I really thought, you know, it was really a strong match. I wasn't really sure at first because, you know, they kind of immediately Miz gets the microphone and says, oh, we're going to add Riley to the match and they're going to do a handicap match. Basically, this is what they did. They did a handicap match. And I'm not a huge fan of I Quit matches in general. Like the Terry Funk, Ric Flair I Quit match, the famous one from 89, is really good. And you know, there have been a couple of other ones that have been solid over the last few years. I know the Cena JBL one is really well remembered. I don't think I've actually even seen it, but I don't know, the ones that are kind of praised aren't my favorite thing. And a match that I like even less is a handicap match. But I just thought the way that it was put together with, you know, Miz taking the microphone and really berating Cena and really like trying to get like psychologically in his head before he set all the different things up. Like, you know, grabbing a kendo stick and repeatedly hitting him in the ribs and the leg, and later, you know, taunting him with a leather strap, and you know, and all that kind of stuff. I just think was really, just really, as it developed, just really, really made you hate Miz and actually root for Cena to, you know, to finally be able to come back. And and then the last spot when he's trapped in the barricade, I thought that was really cool. Then they kind of did a hokey thing, which I didn't like, was they had like an I Quit sound, you know, coming out that, you know, supposedly Cena was supposed to have said. And you pretty quickly you realize that it's kind of a takeoff of the famous Mankind Rock I Quit match from 1999, in which basically, you know, it was played over the loudspeaker. The twist in this one is that they had a cell phone in which it was played. The referee figures it out and then restarts the match, and then eventually, and then Cena kind of, you know, has a little bit of time to recuperate, and then he kind of runs through Riley and Miz, and then hits Miz repeatedly with a chair, and then chases him around sort of the back and then drags him onto the stage and then puts him in the STF, and that's the big finish. So I just thought the way that was structured and the way, you know, like, I like the way that Miz took his time with everything and just, like, really, like, made every little thing have some impact. I just thought it was really cool. It was different. You know, I haven't really seen a match that was quite this way. And I thought the way that Miz and Riley did a lot of the double team stuff was really good. And I just thought, like, you know, other than the hokey thing with the cell phone, which I don't really even think was really that needed, I thought everything else was, you know, just about perfect in this match. And, you know, Cena and Miz, I haven't really necessarily been hugely impressed with their in-ring work during this feud. I mean, it's been okay. I thought WrestleMania was a little disappointing, but this match was very solid and was a, you know, was a worthy main event, definitely.
This will probably be the one part of the night where I don't agree. I didn't like this I Quit match. This was probably the low light to the pay-per-view for me. And I, you know, this was pretty much the sentiment, like you said, on Twitter and everything. There was a lot of harsh criticism on this match. And the big thing for me was the Super Cena aspect. You know, it just blows my mind that somebody can be beat down for 20 minutes straight. Like you said, with kendo sticks and chair shots and, you know, being whipped with a belt and all this stuff, continuously say, you know, no, I don't quit, and, you know, try to be funny about it and this and that, you know, and especially when it's a 2-on-1 handicap match, like you said, you know, involving Riley into it. And then all of a sudden, boom, Super Cena eats his spinach and he comes back and he just, you know, whoops Miz down the aisleway and you know, gives the attitude adjustment on Riley through the table, and next thing you know, he's locks on the STF, and boom, Miz quits. I just didn't like that. I didn't like really anything about that. It was cool to see Cena getting beat down. I figured that that's what you would see, because you would always see Cena, you know, his never give up, never quit attitude in full effect, and that's exactly what you got. And it was funny because in our Future Endeavors prediction show, I had predicted that Miz would win the title using the fake audio clip, like you just said, a la The Rock Mankind from the 90s. I had a feeling that that was going to come into play. And on Monday Night Raw, when Cena was yelling at Miz at the end of the show and said, "You'll never make me say I quit." And the way he screamed it and yelled it, I said, boom, perfect sound clip. They're going to record that. They're going to use it. Miz will win the title. And, you know, and it'll be a nice little, you know, way to do it, you know, in that heel cheating fashion. And when he did do it, I totally marked out, because, I mean, I kind of went on, you know, outside the box on that one, thinking that might be a way it goes, and they did use it. Unfortunately, obviously, like you said, the referee found the tape recorder and reversed the decision, and then Cena, you know, came back and won the match. I just hate the Super Cena thing. We've talked about it on this show before. I just don't like it, you know, I mean, and I don't like the way it ended. I think Cena could have done a way cooler ending and done something a little bit more outside the box to make Miz quit, rather than just locking on the same old submission move that we see him do week in and week out in WWE. It was a special match, a special opportunity for him to do something, you know, to do something with the cars on the stage and something just fresh. And he didn't, you know, I just didn't like the fact that it ended in a submission and Miz taps out in 2 seconds, you know, so I wasn't too hot on this. I mean, it was okay. I didn't hate it. I just, you know, I just can't stand Cena getting beat down for 20 minutes and then come back in the last, you know, 2 minutes of the show and win the match so easily when the odds were just stacked so against him. I don't like when they play out the angle like that.
Yeah. Well, but the thing, you know, with Miz giving up so easily, I think the idea is that, like, yeah, he could have physically taken more punishment, but the idea is that he's a coward and that he's, you know, and that he's afraid of, you know, that he's made Cena so angry, and, you know, he's given all this to Cena, and then Cena, you know, isn't done, and then, you know, it's the coward's way out kind of thing. So I thought it worked fine. I mean, maybe Cena could have sold, you know, I agree with you with the Super Cena to a certain extent. It's like, he doesn't need necessarily be instantly, like, so much better. Like, you can make your comeback and still kind of sell, like, the exhaustion and the pain that you've suffered even while you're sort of coming back. And maybe he doesn't always do that the best. I definitely am down with that and agree with that. But I don't know. I just thought this. It was just something different and something unique, and I just thought the way it played out was pretty cool. It was different than something I was used to seeing. And I was, the elements on paper going in, I would not necessarily have liked it, but just something about it clicked for me, and I thought it was, I thought it was pretty strong. And yeah, the next night, of course, interestingly enough, Miz and Alex Riley suddenly broke up. Miz, basically berated Riley throughout the entire segment, kind of blaming him for the loss, and then kind of pie facing him when Riley reminded him that he was the one who had said I quit, and then suddenly Riley couldn't take it anymore, and then just kind of beat him up around the ring and threw him onto the table and tore his clothes off, and I thought that was actually a pretty cool deal. You kind of a really big surprise, and Alex Riley kind of showed something more than I'd ever really seen from him before. We'll see, in 6 weeks or whatever, if they're able to kind of do anything with Riley or kind of make him a fresh, interesting character. I assume he'll move on over to SmackDown. We'll have to see whether that has any potential, and obviously, what the next direction is for Miz. I mean, I don't think this ruined Miz in any respect. I mean, people kind of say that when a guy loses in the end, but I think, it'll be interesting to see kind of what stage he's at, who he works with next, how prominent of a role he gets. But yeah, I mean, just I think he's proven himself in this run that he's a really valuable guy. He's obviously been just getting better and better the last 2 or 3 years, and so I feel like he's always going to be a guy they can kind of rely on to be a guy people really hate, and a guy who people and a guy who can draw interest in something because of his personality.
I loved what happened on Raw, big time. I'm a big Alex Riley fan, and I liked him from his FCW stuff, and I loved his run on NXT, and he's somebody that the WWE has a lot of faith in. He was the FCW heavyweight champion when he was down there, and they see a big potential for him. So it's been killing me for this last year or so, whatever, since he's been off NXT. I'm glad that he's had TV time, and I'm glad he's been able to do this stuff with The Miz. But they've totally held him back. When he has gotten in the ring, he hasn't been able to go full potential. He's been used as kind of the jobber joke guy, that steps up for The Miz and then gets his butt whooped, that's what I haven't liked. So when they split up on Monday, I just thought Riley was going to get crushed. I saw that beatdown happen in the exact reverse way. Miz jumping him, Miz beating him down, Miz ripping his clothes off, Miz snapping him into the table, Miz doing everything, and then leaving Riley laid out, and boom, he's fired, he's done, and punking him out. I was so blown away that they went the other direction and Riley just destroyed Miz, and I loved it. It was probably my favorite part about Monday Night Raw. It was just so good. It was so refreshing to see him finally snap and just say, "You know what? You're not grateful for what I've done for you. Screw you," and just beat the crap out of him. And I loved it. I really, really loved it, and I'm so happy for him. And I really hope that he moves on to bigger and better things now. I mean, it was crazy to hear the crowd chanting Riley. You never thought you'd hear that. And the crowd was behind him. They were rooting for him. And technically he is on the SmackDown roster, so hopefully he does go over to SmackDown and does something cool, and starts being featured as the wrestler that I know he can be, because he is very, very solid in the ring, and I think a very big potential main event player here within the next couple of years. So, hats off definitely to the way that they ran that angle on Monday.
Yeah, and I was really surprised that the crowd had gotten behind him too, because basically, it was just sort of a thing where, he basically had been betrayed as nothing, and he'd been been forced to quit or leave Miz, a couple of times, and they brought him back kind of under silly circumstances. It just kind of felt like you were tired of that character, and then suddenly, he shows that, and just the way it was set up. And I think a lot of that just because of, the feeling that Miz has developed, particularly over the last 6 months, but obviously he's been a great heel for, a couple of years now. And you know, that was just a great, you know, out of nowhere kind of thing. And it wasn't like out of nowhere in like the sense of like they were trying to shock you or surprise you. It was just out of nowhere, but it like, but it felt natural and organic, you know. Like usually when you want to do those kind of turns, you know, you want to kind of build it up for a couple weeks. Like it, you know, you want like Miz to kind of push Riley around a little bit, and then you know Riley, you know, hesitate, and then finally after a couple weeks, finally get the courage to fight back. But this time, I think it worked better the way they did it, just because like it was so surprising, and you were just, you know, so like taken aback by it that I think it added to the moment.
Definitely, like I said, I loved it. I wouldn't have changed anything about it.
Yeah. Let's see. It's, of course, some of the other, probably the second biggest match on this show was the World Heavyweight Championship rematch between Randy Orton and Christian. And I would have to call this the match of the night. I mean, I was really, you know, just impressed with, you know, how fluid it was, how, you know, just a really built to some really dramatic near falls. And Orton really kind of showed, you know, just, I guess, I don't know, since he's moved to SmackDown, he seems to be showing his athleticism a little bit more. Like, you know, he, a couple SmackDowns ago, he had that like really funny, like jump up in the air splits kind of thing that he did against, I think it was with Mark Henry. And he did like a really impressive leapfrog here, and you know, hit a, you know, pretty cool out of nowhere standing dropkick. I mean, that was stuff we saw out of Orton like in 02, 03, 04, but it seems like he hasn't done that as much in more recent years. I don't know if just injuries or whether it's just he's kind of more embracing the babyface style now as opposed to kind of, you know, the tweener character. I don't know, but I thought this match was really, really fun in a lot of ways and just built to, you know, some really cool, dramatic things. You know, they had a couple of times where they were kind of like fighting over the, you know, between the RKO and the Unprettier, and, you know, and Orton busted out kind of a really cool inverted Boston Crab, which Christian really sold the kind of the pain of that, you know, really, really well. And that was a submission that you were like kind of like unclear what it was at first. But I think the way that Christian sold it really, you know, really, really made it seem like, oh, wow, this is kind of a special thing, you know. And so just, you know, just some great stuff. And then Christian, after fending off an RKO, you know, he kind of calls for the spear and then tries the spear, and then Orton gets a power slam out of nowhere for two. And then Christian's able to finally get the spear out of nowhere, but only get two on there. And then Christian's kind of flailing with frustration. And then finally, they kind of do again with the counters of the RKO and the Unprettier. What's the Unprettier called now? I forget.
The kill switch.
Kill switch, that's right. Yeah. And then Orton sort of dumps him backward and then kind of gets the RKO in the end. And it was a really, really good, like, 14-minute battle. Just, you know, lots of other cool stuff. Christian did a flying headbutt, which I don't think I've seen anyone do a flying headbutt since Benoit. I mean, maybe somebody's done it, but it's been a long time. And just, you know, Christian had some just really tight punches here. And, you know, Orton just, you know, looked really good too. And I just thought it was a fantastic match. And I know probably some people are upset that, you know, Christian, of course, lost again to Orton. And a lot of people are particularly, you know, us internet fans are really behind Christian and, you know, kind of feel that was sort of a raw deal. But I don't know. Christian's having great matches in main events and is really a high focus of the show. And, you know, maybe, yeah, you know, the title reign wasn't handled all that well. And it'll, you know, obviously we don't know, you know, if they're going to do another rematch right away. Christian could turn heel. You know, it's still up in the air what's going to happen in that story. But, you know, right now I think it's going pretty well. And I, you know, and if they keep having great matches like this and the crowd stays into it. And the crowd was really into this match and into both guys. I mean, it was definitely a split crowd. I don't think, you know, it tremendously favored Orton. So I thought it was good stuff. Better than good stuff. I thought it was excellent stuff all around.
Once again, agreed. This, no doubt, was the match of the night. Probably one of the best matches of the year so far. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I thought that their match on SmackDown when Christian lost the title was awesome. I mean, another match of the year candidate right there. You know, for TV match of the year, that'll probably be it. You know, and I was really, really looking forward to the pay-per-view match because, you know, they just tore it down on SmackDown. So I was really curious to see what they did on pay-per-view. And once again, they didn't let down. I mean, in my opinion, this should have been the last match of the night. I mean, this really tore the house down. Everybody loves this match. It was so solid from beginning to end. I don't know what it is about Christian and Orton, but they flow, man. They flow so well together. Their chemistry is awesome. It just works. Everything works between these two. And, you know, I just, you know, been saying that, you know, I haven't been so hot on Orton the last year, 2 years, you know, and I used to be a big Orton fan and he just got kind of played out to me. And since he's been on SmackDown, I just think he's been in rare form. I've been loving everything he's been doing on SmackDown. He's just got this new aura about him, and he's just been working so much better in the ring to me, and, you know, everything has just been great. So, I mean, back on the Orton board for now, and I love it, you know. And I was disappointed Christian didn't get the belt back. I was really, really hoping that Christian would win the title back, you know, to get that big win. Now that, you know, it's not for the charity case of, you know, the belt was vacant. It's Edge's best friend. It's to keep the belt on SmackDown since the brand, you know, draft. You know, this was a good opportunity for them to turn it around and give the belt back to Christian and let him have a little run with it. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. You know, if you read the SmackDown spoilers this week, unfortunately, spoiler alert, Christian is not the number one contender and won't be moving forward with Orton at this point, which kind of sucks. But yeah, they have definitely teased the heel turn, and I think within the next couple months he will fully go heel, and then I think we'll get those two going at it again, probably, you know, maybe SummerSlam time. So look forward to when they do it again, but definitely tore the house down and definitely match of the night by a long shot.
Yeah. Probably the other big, just kind of capping off the a long time feud, you know, kind of the last thing that isn't especially new was the Michael Cole Jerry Lawler match, the Kiss My Foot match, the end of clearly the end of this feud, and probably a feud that should have ended before this, but I thought that this was pretty much exactly what it should have been. Basically, Cole kind of, you know, bringing a doctor's note, trying to weasel his way out of it, but the ref isn't having it. And then Lawler beats him up and tears off his suit, you know, punches him in the mouth, hits the drop kick. And then Cole kind of begs off for a moment, and then gets a very, very short advantage kind of by slamming him into the steps, then taking off his shoe and sock. I enjoyed the moment when the ref almost gags when he sees Cole's like crusty, dirty, you know, foot. And then, you know, Lawler grabs it and sends Cole crashing through the coal mine, breaking through that structure, which got a really big reaction. And then Lawler basically just doing his comeback, taking off his strap, hitting the fist drop, and that's the pin. So that was like roughly 5 minutes all told. And then he calls out Eve, who hits a moonsault, and then calls out Jim Ross, who dumps barbecue sauce all over him. And then Cole kind of like begs off and leaves, and then he says that he's not going to give Lawler satisfaction of kissing his foot. And then out of nowhere comes Bret Hart, you know, he big surprise, and then basically sends him back into the ring, gets him with a sharpshooter, and then Cole kisses Lawler's foot, and that ends it. I thought it didn't overstay its welcome. It was a good blow off to the feud, and we've disagreed on everything here, or on pretty much every step of this Cole Lawler feud so far. So what did you think?
Yes, we have. Hated the WrestleMania thing. Hated that it didn't end there, that we got it for another pay-per-view at Extreme Rules. Hated it then. Really hated the fact that they spent 3 pay-per-views on this angle, which is just way overkill. Taking up valuable pay-per-view spots from other people that deserve it. You know, I didn't like it at all. But I will agree that this was a great wrap-up for the feud. I liked the way this was handled. It had the perfect amount of time. You know, just a quick squash match, embarrass Michael Cole, boom, it's done. Let's move on. And that's what we got here. Finally, I am so happy. I was so scared that they turned this into a fourth match going forward. you know, especially since I will be live at the next pay-per-view, Capital Punishment, with the Future Endeavors crew, and did not want to have to watch these two go at it on pay-per-view. So I'm glad it's done. But no, I agree with you. This played its role great. I loved Eve coming out and you know, doing the moonsault on him. I love Jim Ross coming out and embarrassing them with the barbecue sauce. And then, of course, Bret Hart, you know, great throwback to the awesome, you know, familiar, original Kiss My Foot match, you know, with Bret Hart and Jerry Lawler. So that was cool for him to get involved. And just the whole thing just worked. It was great. And, you know, glad to see it, you know, ended on a proper note. It was hard to kind of bet against Lawler at this point, just because of the stipulations to this match of him having to give him his Hall of Fame ring and induct him into the Hall of Fame and all this stuff. I knew that was never going to happen. So it was a pretty safe bet that Lawler was going to end this one, and they did it the right way.
Yeah. As far as the total feud goes, I mean, you know, there were definitely some flaws in the WrestleMania match, and there were times when, you know, they probably could have done half the angles they did for building up toward the match, and I think it would have been better. I think they just kind of they just hammered it home every week, and I thought, like, individually, most of the stuff that they did was good, but I just think it was too much, and it just started to, you know, like, wear on people. I definitely agree with that, even though, like I said, I think, you know, almost every single individual angle that it was good, I thought, you know, and this, you know, was a good send-off, and I thought, you know, it certainly had its moments, and overall the good outweighed the bad, but it was time for it to end, and I'm glad it ended the way it did. And I did think it was pretty bizarre that they just had Michael Cole come out and apologize on Raw, and then Lawler was kind of like, okay, whatever, and then, you know, then they're sitting next to each other being announced. I think maybe people were so tired of Cole that you couldn't necessarily just have him, like, transition into the heel manager role, and they clearly didn't want to do that in any case. They want Lawler to, or excuse me, Cole to be their lead announcer, you know, for whatever reason. They feel like he's strongest in that role, but, you know, maybe he'd, you know, kind of played out his role as what he was doing. But I just kind of feel like basically the end of Lawler and Cole is that both of them are in the same position they were, you know, 8 months ago or whenever the feud started, you know, 6 months ago, I guess, whatever. So it's just sort of like, okay, now we're just in a circle and we're back to where we were, and then nothing was really accomplished, so to speak, you know? That was the only thing that sort of bothered me about the aftermath of it, but overall, you know, it was, you know, Lawler did a lot of great stuff throughout, especially. It was kind of cool to see him be a featured guy again and kind of show off, you know, kind of the Jerry Lawler of the 80s, you know, just, you know, of kind of being the hero and kind of being, you know, that guy rather than, you know, being the, you know, the horny announcer guy, you know, for that he was for so many years. And I, you know, I've enjoyed him as an announcer for a lot of years. Some of it kind of was grating, but a lot of it was pretty good and funny. And, you know, he can do a lot of different things. And, you know, I've expressed my admiration of Lawler plenty of times, but, you know, it was kind of, even if there were definitely some warts to this whole thing, overall, I thought it was a, you know, pretty enjoyable story.
Yeah, the build-up was great, and I just didn't like the way, like I said, the way WrestleMania played out. I didn't like the way Extreme Rules played out, you know. But like I said, Over the Limit played out great. I just wish it would have happened 2 months ago,
yeah.
You know, because I didn't feel it delivered with how great the build-up was, because it really was one of the best built-up stories for WrestleMania, and it just, you know, for me and for a lot of people, it didn't pan out properly, but... You know, I guess, you know, glad, you know, Lawler got his moment, and, you know, hopefully we can just get back to announcing now and stop this stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, if Lawler comes and wants to, I mean, I'm always for a good Jerry Lawler match, so I don't need to, he needs to take some time off for having another big feud, but you know, if they want to bring out Jerry Lawler, have him do a match, it's great. I always enjoy seeing Jerry Lawler. I'm never gonna hate on the king, so. So anyway, I don't know. I think probably the second best match of the show, well, second or third best match of the show would have been the opener with R-Truth and Rey Mysterio. And I was pretty surprised by how good this match was, just because I think R-Truth has really clicked as a character since his heel turn. I mean, really just been incredible. You know, in his promos have just really been fantastic. But, you know, in the ring, you know, he's never – like, I don't think he's necessarily as bad as some repute him to be. But he definitely can have some sloppiness, can kind of maybe go a little too fast sometimes, and maybe just, you know, the in-ring part isn't necessarily his strong suit. It's more of the character. But I thought, you know, he was more calm and composed here, and I thought just the way that Ray was bumping for him, like when he was pulled across the apron and into the post, and, you know, and just kind of made Truth seem like a tough bully, you know, and I thought that was really, really effective. And, you know, and basically R-Truth, you know, beat him absolutely clean. And it was just a really cool, way to do it. And R-Truth got he got a really good promo at the beginning. I especially liked him making fun of the stank filled hippies in Seattle. So, R-Truth is really, really, you know, he's clicking as a character, and, you know, hopefully this match, you know, now a lot of it was Ray's performance just because Ray's so awesome, but, you know, hopefully, you know, maybe R-Truth can bring it into the ring if he's going to be, you know, kind of moving up and being, you know, more of a top guy.
Yeah, I agree. Once again, I thought this was a great opener to the pay-per-view. Was really, really looking forward to this match. I am loving R-Truth as a heel. I am a big fan. I am on board. The truth will set me free, no doubt. And, you know, I'm loving it. And, you know, I know this was supposed to be him and John Morrison at the pay-per-view. Unfortunately, John Morrison hurt his neck and had surgery, so Ray kind of stepped up to the plate, got in there with him, and I thought they'd work really well together, and they did, you know. I liked R-Truth before, you know. I wasn't always so big on the, you know, the what's up and the way that he was portrayed, but, you know, I always thought he was pretty decent in the ring, and I thought that with the right person he could, you know, do some good stuff. And I knew Ray would be a good guy to work off of. And I said on our prediction show, you know, Truth really needed this. They're pushing him so hard as a heel right now. And for him to be taken seriously, he had to have a dominant win over Ray, you know, and that's what they gave him. And I loved it. You know, a clean win. You know, a lot of people were thinking Del Rio was going to get involved and something was going to happen that was going to give Truth kind of the, you know, the sneaky heel kind of win. But, you know, he went in there, they had a great match, and he won it straight up. And like I said, I mean, just a great opening to the show, and I'm a big R-Truth fan right now. I was one before, but now I'm a big, big fan now. And, you know, I love the little Jimmies. You know, I love that he calls the fans the little Jimmies, and how he put the sunglasses on the kid Monday night and took them right back. And, you know, he just, you know, I love that his pants say shut up now instead of what's up. And it just, you know, I love his attitude. I love how he's playing the black man being held down angle. And he's doing it very, very well. And it all works for me. And I think he's going to be, he continues this path. He will be a very big star. And when last year I would say no chance in hell of him being the WWE champion, I can actually see that happening now with this persona that he's got going on. So much props to R-Truth, and I hope that this continues to be as good as it is so far.
Yeah, and I it just, the combination of just the anger and the insanity and just being so delusional, it's really connecting in a natural way. It's great, you know, and you're right. I mean, you know, and the thing about R-Truth, he doesn't talk like everybody else, you know. I mean, he has his own vocabulary. He has his own, you know, he's a different character than anything we've seen in WWE. And I mean, that I can remember, you know, I mean, it's very, like, you know, his good guy persona was very, like, you know, just felt kind of like a caricature. I mean, but this feels much more real and much more like it's coming from, you know, like a, you know, like a real sense. And it's really cool. I also, one spot that I forgot was Ray hitting a fantastic, really cool bulldog off the second rope for a near fall, and I love Booker's call on it, you know, the big giant bulldog off the second rope. For some reason, I found that very amusing. I can't possibly impersonate Booker T. It probably would have been funnier if I could, but I'm not willing to do that. So we'll just have to like pretend that it was in his voice, and that's funny. So I also like the end when Truth got a water bottle afterward and took a sip, kind of playing off of his initial the initial thing that Morrison was making fun of him for, which led to his heel turn, the drinking of the water bottle, and then he smashed it right into Ray's head. And you're right, you know, this was I think it was important for Truth to actually be able to win this match, like, on his own merits, and just to kind of be like, you know, he's the bad guy, but he's good enough to beat Rey Mysterio. And I think that was I think this was the right time, and it was exactly the right finish to kind of progress him forward. So you know, we'll see what they do with them. It's kind of unclear what the plan for capital punishment is for Raw. They didn't really set up anything naturally. It could be, you know, you could definitely see maybe Cena, you know, Punk or Cena Truth, or you could do a four way and add Ray, or, you know, who knows what they'll do. I don't know if they've, you know, outlined, if there's any spoilers that have outlined plans yet, but you know, but yeah, I would like to see R-Truth get the shot, you know, and it would be, you know, I'm not sure about Truth and Cena as a match, but you never know. I mean, they've, you know, they've pulled out unexpected matches with, you know, guys, you know, who are worse than Truth and Cena. So maybe they just have really good chemistry and end up, you know, being pretty good. Who knows?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, it would be a cool feud, and they kind of teased that, you know, Monday night with him getting in Cena's face and saying, you know, I never liked you, and, you know, because, I mean, they played such a big angle, you know, months ago with the whole Nexus thing and John Cena, where R-Truth was always that guy that went to Cena and said, you know what, man, stand up to him and do what you do, and, you know, was always kind of like that voice for Cena, you know, not even that long ago. So it's funny now that, you know, they play that whole, you know, I never liked you, I just, you know, was doing it all for the little Jimmies and you know, all that stuff. So I'm liking where it's going. I think that Truth and Cena would have a pretty good little feud. It'd be something new and unique, and I'm hoping that is what they go with for the main event at Capital Punishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although I still think, you know, I think there might be still some juice in Punk and Cena. I know they feuded a bit for, you know, a few months ago, but it wasn't really a long feud, and they only really had a couple of matches, but, you know, they had great chemistry too, and, you know, and you know, Punk really right now is pretty unparalleled as well, you know, as far as, you know, what he's doing. So, you know, if they went in either direction, it'd be fine. I'm not sure about a four-way, just because I'm not really naturally a, you know, four-way kind of guy, but we'll see. So, let's see. You know, as far as some of the other highlights, there was Sin Cara against Chavo Guerrero, which I thought was good. You know, they did a lot of, you know, they pretty much was just kind of a showcase of Sin Cara's, you know, cool high flying flippy stuff. You know, did a standing moonsault, a plancha, and do a twisting press, dive off a post to the outside, and a handspring elbow. And I kind of like the story going into it too. Just you know, kind of Chavo being a little, you know, sort of pretending to be Sin Cara's buddy, but you know, keep saying that, you know, I taught him that, or he got that from me. And then, you know, of course, you know, getting involved in helping him in, you know, cheating to help Sin Cara win without Sin Cara realizing it, and then Sin Cara being mad about it afterwards. So, you know, I thought this was fine. It didn't really, like, you know, it was very flashy, but didn't really kind of like have the substance for that I you know, would normally like to see. It's just something of it about it didn't click as much as I would have expected it to. But it was still, you know, it was a fun showcase for Sin Cara. I think he's, you know, pretty much doing fine. And, you know, it was, you know, didn't mess anything up, which it was kind of, you know, his trouble for his first few weeks in any case. So, you know, pretty good stuff. What'd you think?
I liked it. You know, this was another match that I was very excited to see. Mainly due to the fact that, you know, I've been waiting for Sin Cara to get a pay-per-view match, like a good pay-per-view match. And, you know, I'm not the biggest Chavo Guerrero fan. I've never really cared for Chavo all that much. But I, like you said, I liked the beginning of this feud where Chavo was just coming out and he was doing commentary and he was playing the role of, you know, hey, Sin Cara's, you know, he looks up to me and he's following my, you know, the way that I did this business, you know, and coming through Mexico. And, you know, and then as the weeks went on, it was like, oh, he learned that move from me and he did that, learned that move from my dad. And, you know, he's using Eddie's moves and he's using this and that. And, you know, and all of a sudden it was like Sin Cara's ripping him off and all this stuff. So that whole aspect was great, you know, and then, of course, you know, it led to that match with Sin Cara and Daniel Bryan when Chavo helped him win, and Sin Cara noticed it on the Titantron in the replay, and then they got into a shoving match, and then I was really hoping that this match would get added to the pay-per-view, and you know, it did, and I thought it was some good stuff. You know, I figured Chavo and Sin Cara would have a pretty good chemistry and, you know, could put on a good match, and, you know, and they did. You know, it wasn't like it wasn't the best thing. I expected almost a little bit more from them. Sometimes it felt a little bit too rushed. But overall, I thought it was some pretty good fun. And, you know, just looking forward to some good, you know, some more good pay-per-view matches. You know, I thought Sin Cara's match with Daniel Bryan a couple weeks ago was amazing. And Sin Cara's match with Tyson Kidd a week before that was really, really good as well. So, you know, he's having some good matches with some good people. And I think, you know, and I heard Chavo and him were having really good matches at house shows. So, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know if it was the pressure of the pay-per-view debut or what that made them kind of mixed match sometimes. But, you know, overall, I thought it was a good match. I thought it was fun, and I was glad it was added to the card.
Yeah, and, you know, they didn't get a whole lot of – they didn't get a huge amount of time. Well, I guess they got 14 minutes. That's a pretty good amount of time. Yeah, I think at this point, you know, this is something that they shouldn't necessarily extend it too much. I guess they had a match. They have a match on SmackDown, but I it's something where, you know, Sin Cara should dispense with Chavo and then move on to something else. It's certainly not something they need to extend very well. But yeah, it was nice to have it and be something a little different on pay per view. I definitely agree with that. And, you know, and it clicked fine. You know, it just wasn't fantastic, but, you know, it was fine as far as it goes. And let's see, let's go through the other matches a little bit. We had Ezekiel Jackson defeating Wade Barrett by disqualification, which I thought was actually pretty solid. It was a little better than I expected. It wasn't fantastic. The finish, you know, with basically Ezekiel having basically setting up for the finish and then Cole running into attack and was, you know, pretty standard thing, I guess. Obviously, you know, they're just kind of presumably delaying it a month until, you know, Ezekiel wins the Intercontinental title, most likely, unless they decide they want to keep it on Barrett, and yeah, they could do that too. Two things that I really liked were, one was Booker during the commentary emphasizing, you know, how important it is to win your first title, and he even brought up winning the TV title back in the Nitro days, which I thought was cool because I remember that moment when I was I believe it was the day after Starrcade 97, he beat Disco Inferno for the TV title almost out of nowhere, and that really actually did launch his career. I mean, he really, you know, came into his own as a singles competitor and you know, eventually, you know, kind of went up the line from TV title, and then, you know, eventually the next year US title, and then WCW title and all that, even as, of course, WCW was crumbling, but he was one of the highlights in the dying years. And I also thought that Zeke's I like the repeating body slams thing. You just kind of like over and over just grabbing a guy and slamming him. And I like the way that the, you know, when he kept doing it, they were really, you know, Wade and then the others later were selling the fatigue of that. And the crowd really did seem to be into, you know, the impressiveness of that, even though it's just like a really simple thing. But it really did kind of get over. I don't know how long he's been doing that, but it's I haven't really watched SmackDown all that much, but yeah, it was a pretty cool deal.
You make me laugh because that's the thing I hated about this match was the repeated body slams. I think that is such a joke. To me, it just doesn't work. It's something new he just started. I think the SmackDown before Over the Limit was the very first pay-per-view or the very first match that he started doing that. And, you know, and we actually talked about this on Future Endeavor Sunday, and we all hated it when we discussed it because it just, I don't know, to me, it's just not I don't know how to really explain it. It's like you had Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit who did the multiple belly to back suplexes and held on, you know, and did like the three suplexes and it was awesome. And you had like Eddie and Chavo doing the three amigos, you know, the three suplexes where they do it and twist and turn and lift up and do it again and twist and turn. That stuff all looks cool. A body slam to me, it just got boring, especially like, I mean, on SmackDown, he didn't do it as many times. At the pay-per-view, he did it like six times on Wade, and I was just like, come on already. Like, I just don't like that. I'm a huge Ezekiel Jackson fan, and I'm really liking him, and I was really hoping he'd win the Intercontinental title on Sunday. Unfortunately, he didn't, and I like pretty much everything about him. I'm not a fan of the multiple body slams, but a body slam isn't much to me. I don't feel like it would take all that much out of somebody, and then doing it over and over again. I mean, yeah, obviously it's going to hurt the more you do it, but it doesn't look good to me on TV. It doesn't sell as properly as some of these other moves that have been done in the past on a multiple occasion.
Wait. Let's hold off of this. Wait a minute.
Okay.
A body slam did fell under the Giant. So you're telling me if it's not good enough for under the Giant that it can't fell Wade Barrett? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
I don't know. I think you gotta might want to rethink that. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but that was a body slam from Hulk Hogan, and you know back then they didn't have anything cooler to do. Yeah, I just don't like it. But you know, one thing I do like that Ezekiel Jackson's doing now is the fact that he's adapted the torture rack as his new finisher, and I think that works for him 150%. I love him using the torture rack. You know, obviously made famous by Lex Luger. You know, I loved when he did it, and with a guy Ezekiel's size, it just looks like it crushes. And I'm really liking him doing that. You know, but I thought it was a good match too. This was another match that I was very stoked to have on the card. Another new match. You know, we knew it was coming once, you know, he left the core. And, you know, I was hoping, like I said, I was hoping he'd win the title, unfortunately. But you know what? They want to stretch this feud out a little bit longer and, you know, have the big match, you know, the big win. And hopefully he gets it at the next pay-per-view. So, you know, another good match on the card. Like I said, no qualms about really any of the matches, honestly, other than the ending of the I Quit match. But I like this feud. I like the way these guys work together, too. And I look forward to their next match. And hopefully Big Zeke will be the new Intercontinental Champion.
We'll see. And what did you think of Big Show and Kane against CM Punk and Mason Ryan?
I liked it. There was another one that I liked and another one I was looking forward to. I think I was really excited about the teaming of Punk and Ryan because I felt that Ryan could learn from Punk and they could work well together because Punk's so quick and agile and Ryan's got the muscle. And I thought they'd make a really good tag team, and I actually predicted them to walk away with the tag team titles on Sunday. Unfortunately, once again, they did not, which makes no sense to me since on Monday you had new tag team champions with the other two members of Nexus, Michael McGillicuddy and David Otunga, which that team doesn't make sense to me. I'd much rather, you know, if they were planning on moving the belts anyway, to have it be done with, you know, Punk and Ryan. So a little saddened by that aspect, but overall I thought it was a fun little match. I liked CM Punk's attitude in the match. He came off great on TV. I loved him paying respect to Macho Man and dropping the elbow on Sunday night. He loved him on Monday night wearing the Macho Man attire. You know, you could tell he was just a real big fan, and that was good stuff. And you know, so I thought it was a fun match. I thought, it was good to see the tag team titles defended on pay-per-view. And the same thing I said about the Intercontinental title. It's the first time that's been defended in months. So, you know, on pay-per-view. And, you know, it's always good to see the, you know, the titles defended. So, you know, good stuff.
Yeah, I liked I agree with you on Punk's attire on Monday was awesome. Throughout that entire match, he was awesome, but we'll get to that. I really do think that if you're going to have one of the Nexus teams win, I mean, just, yeah, Otunga, McGillicuddy, blah. Yeah, they do nothing for me. Punk and Ryan would have, Punk's great. Ryan's really raw, but you can, you know, hide him a lot with, you know, with Punk being there if you want to go in that direction. And I'm disappointed that they went the other way with it. I thought Big Show and Kane were doing okay as a team. Maybe Big Show might need some, guessing from what happened on Raw, maybe he needs some time off with an injury. They kind of did a thing where, Rodriguez hit Big Show in his leg with his car, and basically, you know, did a big injury thing. So it looks like he might be out for a while. But yeah, seems like a strange decision to go with as far as that goes. But yeah, it was nice to see Punk doing the elbow drop off the top, you know, and all that, you know, just that was definitely a cool thing to see. And the final match was Brie Bella defending her Divas Championship against Kelly Kelly. What did you think about this?
I thought it was okay. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of either of these two, but, you know, I thought they did a decent little match for the time they had. I think the biggest disappointment was everybody was expecting Karma to come out and do something, and she never came out. So, you know, it was what it was expected. I actually expected Kelly to win the match. So I was off on my predictions that night. I expected Kelly to walk away the new Divas champ. You know, the Bellas, of course, pulling their twin magic and swapping out like they always do to get the win. You know, wasn't the greatest, but it wasn't the worst. You know, Kelly's gotten a hell of a lot better, and I've always thought the Bellas were pretty good in the ring too. So, you know, they did what they were supposed to, just missed the Karma aspect.
Yeah, I love the Bellas. Actually, I think they're really good at what at, you know at the just that those characters, and that there's really great at being obnoxious, and you know, and they really are clicking for me, you know, as far as that goes, and just being mean and being petty, and you know, and all that. I think they really do well. I think the heel turns really, you know, kind of revitalized them, you know, a bit. And yeah, they're fine in the ring, you know. And I agree, Kelly's improved. You know, I mean, it wasn't. You know, it's, you gotta kind of consider the standards that they have, but, you know, they're, making an effort and, you know, not messing things up too much. And that's, you know, that's always good. So, you know, maybe they can even develop more and, you know, start having really good matches here. It would have, you know, the thing about, of course, Karma not coming out and then not, and then, you know, the angle on Raw, which we talk about in a minute, is now, you know, the kind of the hope was that Karma can work with, could work with all these women, and, you know, and usually when you work with somebody who's really good, you end up, you know, improving yourself and then able to, you know, start having better matches. And of course now it seems as though Karma is going to be gone for, quite a while. And, that unfortunately, you know, is less likely to happen. So that's a bit of a disappointment, but, yeah, but anything else talk about as far as – I guess we went through all the matches. There's probably nothing else on pay-per-view.
Yeah, probably, you know, nothing else really much. They didn't waste any time really with any kind of, you know, backstage nonsense or yeah. any kind of bull. And yeah. you know, we had, like I said, I had a lot of new feuds and new matches we hadn't seen before and some good stuff. So overall, I'd say thumbs up.
Yeah. One backstage thing I thought was pretty funny was when Big Show and Kane
yes.
had attacked Otunga and McGillicuddy, and then CM Punk, you know, basically does not care about it at all, and he just is angry at them, and wants to fight them, and he's like, okay, guys, walk it off, it's all right, you know, just that was pretty amusing. So I guess
it was great.
Yeah, I guess it's that. You know, it seems like they're moving toward Mason Ryan becoming a good guy. They didn't really do anything with it on Raw, so I don't know. You know, I'm not clear on what that plan. You know, not that I need to be clear on what the plan is, because we'll just let the plan unfold. But you know, interesting to see what sort of direction they go with that, if any. You know, so they tend to change their mind a lot, it seems, as well. So who knows? But so let's talk about Karma. The Raw segment, which it seemed very puzzling at the time, was pretty universally hated. It seems when it happened, basically, they had eight of the women in the ring. We're about to set up a 4-on-4 match, and then Karma comes out and gets kind of the giant reaction. And now it's like, you know, she's only really been up against like one or two women at a time, and it's, you know, of course, dominated, but usually chosen one to fight and then either spared the other, or the other one ran away, or last week she flicked a Kelly Kelly in the forehead very amusing manner. So and this week she went into the middle of the ring and looked like they were all about to surround her and about to swarm her, and she was going to kind of take them all out. And then suddenly she knelt down, she started crying and breaking down and kind of muttering to herself, and you know, it was sort of, you know, it was puzzling. And And I, you know, at the time, I didn't watch it live. I saw it a couple of hours later, and you know, I thought, well, you know, I do think that, you know, I wasn't sure about it. I wasn't necessarily going to call it a misstep because I thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe they have an idea here that could work. There is, you know, we all kind of think of, you know, of there's sort of like a magical formula of, you know, building up the monster heel by having him or her run, usually him, but in this case her, run through everyone, basically just kind of pound on people, destroy people, squash people, and then eventually you build up a hero to vanquish her. And, you know, we kind of saw that direction, you know, playing out here, which is obviously a fun storyline. It's worked a lot in wrestling, but and we could see it happening here because of the fact that, you know, unlike with the men, I think WWE is pretty willing to let Karma basically run through the women's division, you know, and let her, you know, be put over all those people rather than with the politics that are somewhat involved in the men, certain guys, you know, they're not going to let be portrayed as getting destroyed. So, you know, obviously just kind of seeing the potential that was simmering here and then to see this sort of is puzzling, but I do think there's limitations with a monster heel. There's a shelf life to that character. So maybe, you know, the idea was, okay, we're going to do something a little different here. We're going to kind of give it a twist and not have it be the typical monster heel and give it a little bit of dimension. And then maybe that's something different. Of course, we find out not too long afterward that Karma is going to be out for, you know, 9 months was what the Observer reported. I guess it was speculated that, you know, she might be pregnant. That I'm not sure if that's actually been confirmed yet. That seems to be what people are saying. So, other, but apparently she's going to be out for a while, so that's not going to happen, and she's basically going to be written out. So yeah, she's not going to be around, which sucks.
Yeah, it does suck because this is the best thing that's happened, you know, to the Divas division in a very, very long time, and I've just been loving it, you know. And then they've already set that status to where every time you see a Divas match now, you're just waiting for her to come out and do something, you know. And I was waiting for her to, you know, finally get, you know, be in a match and do something. And you know, she didn't pop up on Raw or SmackDown last week, and then she didn't pop up on the pay-per-view, and we're wondering what was going on. And then, like you said, you know, Monday, 8 Diva match, perfect opportunity. That music hit, she came in, got in the middle of all those divas, and I was like, oh, it's about to go down right now, and was very, very excited. And then, yeah, she got to her knees and cried, and it didn't make much sense. And then they just cut to a commercial, and I hate when they do that because then I'm just sitting there like, what the hell just happened? You know, like, you know, what did the other divas do, and how did she get up and walk away? Like, I don't like when they cut away like that. I mean, how do you cut away with her in the middle of the ring crying? You know, I didn't like that at all. And then they come back from commercial and don't even really address it, and they just move on with the night. It was very odd. I didn't get what they were doing or where they were going with that. I thought when she got to her knees and started crying, she was going to do that. And then I figured some of the good girl divas would walk over to her and be like, oh, it's okay, and kind of, you know, touch on her. And she would just go ballistic and start beating the crap out of all of them. But that didn't happen. And then, yeah, of course, the next day, all of a sudden, boom, we got all these reports popping up saying she's out for 9 months, and she's, you know, hurt, or she's this and she's that, you know. And the speculation right now is that she's pregnant, and that's why she's going to be out, you know, for the 9 months. So, very, you know, crazy news, and a big blow to the Divas division. The news also came out today that Layla is hurt and she's getting surgery, and she'll be out 6 to 8 months as well. So not a good week for the Divas division.
Yeah, and I well, yeah. One thing I think on that segment is that they really could have, like, they had the camera focused on Karma the whole time. They could have just kind of done some reaction shots with the other women there, just to kind of see, like, show them kind of being puzzled or kind of being, you know, put off or whatever. That was one reason why I was a little confusing, because, like, you didn't really see, like, you know, they weren't giving you cues on how to play it, which, you know. Maybe, you know, again, building a mystery, maybe you don't have to do that, but it was certainly, you know, a puzzling first step in what seemed like it was going to be a saga, and of course, it apparently is not going to be. Assuming the reports that she's going to be out are true, I mean, that again, that's, you know, I you know, there was an observer report, but I haven't really seen much else in anything with more detail. So we'll know soon enough, and that's probably the case. But you never know.
I read it was confirmed yesterday that she is pregnant.
Okay. Well,
that's supposedly. I mean, once again, you know, well, I guess. You know, who knows who confirms what, but that is, you know, last I read, it was supposed to be 100% confirmed that is the reason behind it. So,
okay, it very well may be. But the other thing about the Monster Heel that I just wanted to bring up real quick is that, you know, your anticipation, of course, was that she was going to basically beat up everybody. And I think that, you know, there's something where, you know, basically in that instance, she's not the monster villain anymore. She's the, you know, she's basically Goldberg, you know, I mean, she's, you know, the one who's destroying everyone who, you know, everyone's rooting for. And, you know, and I think there's just sort of a natural, you know, fans today are naturally kind of conditioned to support strong characters, even if they're, you know, would have been villains 20 years ago. So I think it's harder to create a character, you know, in that way than it used to be. And, you know, another thing with the longevity thing is, you know, you could build up a monster over, you know, 6-9 months and, you know, and do that story, you know, back in the day, because of course, you know, they could just move on to the next territory, you know, a year later and then do kind of the same act there and, you know, rinse and repeat for 30 different areas. But, unfortunately, you know, there's not, you know, I mean, you know, there's certainly fans who have never seen Karma before, but I mean, but obviously Karma is already pretty famous in TNA and there's really two places to go. And maybe if, you know, a few, you know, Japan or Mexico might be options too, but there's not nearly as many places to work and to hone that character. So you basically, if you want to stay in WWE and be in there for years and years, you have to be multifaceted. And if you present it in a way, in a multidimensional way to be able to survive. So, you know, and now Karma obviously is very talented. Maybe she could do it anyway, but yeah, I just think people, you know, who want and expect a certain thing, thinking like, oh, this works because it worked all these other times, kind of have to realize the ways in which wrestling has changed. That's kind of the point that I'm making there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I mean, it totally makes sense.
All right. Yay. I like to make sense.
Yes. It's always good to make sense.
Yeah. So I think one other big thing for Mara was, of course, the main event was R-Truth and CM Punk against Ray and John Cena. And Bret Hart was the special guest referee. And I thought it was pretty fun times. I thought Punk really, obviously a great performance, had the Macho Man tights and trunks and yellow boots, the old, you know, pink with the stars in the back. Just really nice little tribute. I thought it was really cool. They did that. Seemed like he was a guy who was really influenced by Savage. And the more I think about it, you can kind of see Punk as a mixture of Bret Hart and Randy Savage in certain ways, just kind of, you know, the kind of his style, kind of the character a little bit, you know, and I liked during the match when he was doing the moves that, you know, some of Bret Hart's famous moves, and then sort of taunting Bret afterward and kind of getting under Bret's skin, which of course kind of played into the finish of Bret eventually just deciding to, help out Ray and, you know, put Punk into the sharpshooter, punch him, put him in the sharpshooter, and then Ray pinned him after the leg drop. And I thought that was just, you know, kind of a different, you know, sort of feel-good finish, you know. And then, you know, Punk can still be, like, angry, like, next week. Like, you know, oh, it was unjustified that this happened and I deserve, you know, he can whine and complain and get heat from that. So that was a pretty cool deal overall. What did you think?
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was a good match. And, you know, based off how that went down, I can definitely see them going the four-way route, like you said, you know, with Cena, Truth, Punk, and Ray for the main event, maybe at the next pay-per-view, you know, which I wouldn't be against. You know, those are all good guys I would like to see in the ring, you know, go at it. I did read yesterday that, you know, Punk is pretty much guaranteed to have a push at some point this summer with Cena. I don't know if they're going to pull that plug, you know, now. I still think Truth is the most likely case, but you know, if they can get him involved and, you know, get Ray in that mix to, you know, help, you know, keep it a little flashy, you know, I'm all for it. So no, I like the way it went down. I loved the sharpshooter and then the leg drop from Ray while he was in the sharpshooter. I thought that was pretty awesome. So
yeah,
good stuff.
Yeah, and it, like we said before, I mean, I think either Cena Punk or Cena Truth is, you know, it has a very fresh storytelling possibilities. I know we've seen Cena Punk a bit, like I said, but I still think there's dimensions to, you know, at play there. There's, you know, there's things they can do that'll be different, and that can be different from what Cena's been doing for, you know, quite a long time. So, and maybe both those guys can bring something different out of Cena and, you know, maybe freshen him up a little bit too. So, I think last couple of months in WWE have kind of just generally been a little uninspired for the most part. I think R-Truth has really been, you know, kind of one of the big highlights, but I do think, you know, there's potential in both those things going forward. I'm not quite as excited about Orton and Sheamus, even though I like Sheamus, but I don't know. I was not really, you know, we saw Orton and Sheamus a lot last year, and I didn't particularly enjoy it any of the times they did it. So, you know, and now maybe, you know, Sheamus is
get ready for it again.
Yeah, Sheamus is more experienced now, and Orton, it seems to be clicking a lot better on SmackDown for whatever reason. I agree with you that he's been a lot more fun and a lot more just, I don't know, lively for whatever reason since the move to SmackDown. From what I've seen, you know, I've been watching, you know, hit or miss, but yeah, it just seems like, for whatever reason, that's emboldened him a bit. So maybe, yeah, maybe they'll have a good feud. Who knows? It's I just kind of feel like it's a little tired. But again, you know, I think we talked about last month, like the options for Orton on SmackDown right now, there's nothing really that fresh or new that, you know, is evident without somebody kind of being built up. So, you know, I guess, you know, of the options, I think, you know, I think Sheamus is fine. So we'll see how it goes. Any other WWE happenings think we should talk about?
You know, I think it's hard to not touch on Macho Man.
Oh yeah,
you know,
that's
a little big one there.
yeah. I mean, obviously, yeah, I mean, you talked about him a lot, and you know, we did the same on the Fair to Flair podcast, and I'm going to be doing some podcasts upcoming on some of Macho Man's main event matches and touching on that as well. But yeah, we should definitely talk a little bit about it. You know, for me, I mean, Savage has been, you know, my favorite wrestler, you know, basically since I was a kid, you know, or, you know, at least among that group, if not my favorite wrestler, and was definitely, you know, one of the major reasons why I got into became a professional wrestling fan and stayed there. And, you know, obviously, you know, an innovator in a lot of ways in his high flying style, you know, just had the versatility to portray so many different characters, you know, whether it be, you know, kind of the wild and crazy villain, you know, the hero, the, you know, the defender of his woman, you know, the cocky and arrogant heel, just, you know, kind of, you know, the whole spectrum. He could kind of do it all and yet still be the Macho Man, be the same guy. You know, he just had so many different facets of that character that was really awesome. And, you know, the crazy interviews, and had great matches. I mean, I think, you know, the first decade of WrestleMania, you could make a case that he was Mr. WrestleMania. I mean, he had, you know, he had Savage Steamboat. He had, you know, the great match with Flair at WrestleMania 8. He had the incredible match and, you know, especially the, you know, the aftermath reuniting with Elizabeth with Ultimate Warrior match at the career ending match at WrestleMania 7. A really, really great Mega Powers Collide match. I don't think it's as well remembered as it should be at WrestleMania 5. I mean, so, you know, he was able to pull off, you know, a lot of great matches throughout that first decade of WrestleMania, you know, before the, you know, the Shawn Michaels era, you know, really took off. And, you know, and so was just doing great stuff. And, you know, had a great run also in WCW, that feud with DDP. And, you know, and was just you know, a really fun guy to watch and, you know, and one of my favorites. What do you remember most about Randy?
Oh, you know, just how charismatic he was, his interviews, his promo, you know, his promos were just, they just stand out, of course, you know, I mean, his impact on pop culture and just, you know, it's funny because any non-wrestling fan, you know, if they try to mock wrestling or talk wrestling to you, it's either going to be Hulk Hogan's brother or it's going to be, oh, yeah, you know, it's just that's the automatic voice that comes into non-wrestling fans' heads when they think of wrestlers. And, you know, Savage, you know, when I got into wrestling, you know, Savage was, you know, probably my favorite, you know, when I first got into it. I mean, I loved him. He was just so flashy and so unique, and he wasn't like anybody else. And, you know, at a time when everybody was so Hulk Hogan, I was very Macho Man, you know, and, you know, I loved his whole run in WWE, and I felt so betrayed by him when he went to WCW, you know, and he did some, you know, good stuff there, and, you know, seeing him in the Spider-Man movie, and of course the Slim Jim commercials, and just everything, you know, I mean, he made such a big impact, and I was so happy that, you know, it seemed he was making good ground with the WWE on good terms to come back. You know, we hadn't heard or seen anything of him in WWE for so long, and every year when the Hall of Fame names came out, we always expected to hear Macho Man. You know, he was the biggest name that has not been inducted yet, and, you know, year after year he gets passed by, and, you know, this year the WWE All-Stars game came out, and he was a part of that, and he was doing promo work for it, and it was so good to see him do a promo for this video game, and, you know, and you start hearing the rumors now that he was about to be inducted probably next year, the year after. And it was just nice to see that ball rolling, and then boom, you know, we get shattered last week with the news, you know, of his passing, and it was just, it's sad, man. Anytime one of these guys drops, I mean, it's just a piece of my childhood goes away, and, you know, it's the thing with getting older, you know, and it sucks because we lost a good one this time, you know, one of the greatest of all time, and he'll forever be remembered, and I'm just so glad WWE did that big tribute package on Monday night. So well done, and you know, definitely gonna miss him. It's gonna be sad now because you know, you pretty much lock him in for the Hall of Fame now, and it's unfortunate that we're not gonna get to hear him do his acceptance speech, because he was the guy that I wanted to hear give a speech, you know, when he gets inducted, and unfortunately we'll never get to hear that now, and it's very, very sad. Just the whole thing was just heartbreaking, and you know, just you know, hope that everybody, you know, continues to, you know, look at what he's done for the business, and, you know, and cherish, you know, what he's done for wrestling. So just very, very sad.
Yeah. And you're right about that video. I mean, that was just perfect. I mean, the WWE should be applauded for, I mean, just the high level of production of that video. And, you know, obviously, you know, there seemed to be a huge rift between WWE and Vince McMahon and Macho Man Randy Savage for whatever reason, and that's of course unfortunate. And and although I do think, you know, not that I would have ever expected Savage to come back as a full time wrestler again, but I do think that kind of quitting on his own terms, you know, from WCW and never really coming back. I know he had sort of a, you know, very brief thing with TNA, but basically, you know, he'd been retired for, you know, for more than a decade. And like, he wasn't around constantly to kind of remind us that he had gotten old and was, you know, kind of broken down and, you know, all that stuff that kind of people say about Flair and Hogan, which I think some of that's a little unfair because, you know, I'm not willing to tell anybody when it's time for them to hang it up. You know, that's, you know, they can decide that when they're too old to do it. But yeah, I think there was kind of a dignity with Savage where he just kind of was like, you know, okay, you know, I tried to come back, but, you know, I just, this isn't for me anymore. I can't do it at that level anymore. So, you know, I'm going to, you know, do voiceover work and, you know, just live a quiet life. And, you know, and whether it was, you know, pride or whatever reason he did for doing that, or maybe just because the door was closed in WWE, you know, whatever. It was just, you know, I think that may have contributed to just the huge reaction. I mean, it was going to get a huge reaction that he passed away no matter what. But I think it may have even added like a layer of emotion to that emotional support. Is that not only had, you know, not only are we sad that he's gone, but we missed him. You know, we missed him for all this time because he hadn't been around. And I think that's, you know, adds another layer of significance to it. And but yeah, he was fantastic. I mean, if you're somebody who has not seen very much of Randy Savage or hasn't seen him at all, you know, seek him out. You know, I mean, you probably have over the last week, but you know, just you know, watch what you can. He had obviously great WrestleMania matches. He had a lot of other tremendous matches too. You know, the DVD is a good start. You know, he was really an innovator in a lot of ways, even before his WWE days. I mean, in Memphis and in, you know, his dad's ICW promotion, which was really a very raw renegade promotion that really fought against the establishment at the time, and, you know, was influential in a lot of ways. And so, yeah, he was, you know, he was a man of many hats, and, you know, he was great. And obviously, you know, very sad and very much we missed, definitely. So, anything to add, Don?
No, I think we summed it up. You know, it's just it's sad, and he will be missed. You know, like I said, we lost one of the greatest of all time. So
yeah,
it just, like I said, I feel like I lose a piece of my childhood every time one of these guys goes, and this was a big one. So.
Yeah, it's tough, definitely. So why don't you tell everyone about Future Endeavors that doesn't know, and let them know where they can find you.
Yeah, of course. Future Endeavors, you know, if you're looking, you know, obviously you listen to this, you like wrestling talk. So if you like wrestling talk, head on over to Future Endeavors. We go live every Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern. We discuss, you know, all wrestling. We do MMA talk as well. And, you know, we touch on everything, current events for the whole week, and, you know, have a good time at it. So enjoy us and head on over. And future-endeavors.com is the website. And, of course, you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/futureendeavors, and follow on Twitter, twitter.com/futureendeavors, myself/DxDonMega. Capital Punishment, we are going live to the paper this next pay-per-view. The whole team will be there in person. So if you're going to Capital Punishment, hit us up, let us know. We'd love to meet as many people as we can. And we just did a big we did our first big interview this past Sunday on our episode. We interviewed New Jack, the original gangsta from ECW. ECW original New Jack came on with us. We had him for over an hour and got into some great storytelling and some real big stories, you know, of his time in the wrestling business. So a really, really good listen. We've been getting great positive feedback about this episode, and it's been heavily downloaded for the, you know, we just did the show on Sunday. It's now Wednesday as we record this, and it's gotten a massive amount of hits so far. So very happy with the success of that interview. So you know, definitely check that out if you'd like to hear a good interview there with the ECW original.
Yeah, well, definitely everyone check that out. And thanks for listening, Don. Thanks again for coming on the show. We'll do it again after Capital Punishment.
All right. And got your live report going from there.
Definitely. All right. And everyone take care, and thanks for listening. Goodbye.